for the benefit of those with flash photography.
All right. Happy holidays. Welcome, everybody, to a very special holiday edition of DreamWork. I, as always, am Colin Delaney. In a moment, you will hear my tag team partner, Cheech. And this is DreamWork. This week, we are doing a little something different for the holiday week. Me and Cheech decided that we'd look back at this year of recordings. We look back at this year of episodes and pick out 10 of our favorites and review them, talk about them. You guys can hear what we thought. And if you haven't listened to them, go back and check them out. Next week, we have, so this week, holiday issue. Next week, 2020 year in review, a tag team wrestling year in review, a To Infinity and Beyond year in review. So very excited about that. And without further ado, let's get down to it and check out our top 10 episodes of this year. Thanks, you guys, for listening. And yeah, let's do it.
Hey, buddy.
Merry Christmas.
Santa Cheech up in the house.
And happy holidays to everybody.
You got to be PC nowadays.
Well, yeah, I want to get everybody included. Everybody's included.
Everybody's in on the party. Everybody is here for this very special episode of DreamWork.
Yeah. Yeah, I figure, you know, it's Christmas time, year end. Let's take a look back.
Yeah, so what we did, this is probably the least formatted show we've done in quite a while, but we each picked five teams. And we'll go back and forth, and we'll make a top 10 favorites of 2020.
Yeah, man, it was fun. It was fun. Yes, and this may be the least formatted, but I did want to actually surprise you with a little bit of a format in this. What were your preliminary thoughts on doing this podcast and covering all these tag teams?
Okay, so my preliminary thoughts was I wanted to plan the crap out of it, but I knew that wasn't going to be very easy. I was going to send you a criteria for list making, but then I was like, that's a lot. So my preliminary thoughts were I wanted to format the shit out of it, but I didn't.
Okay. Because, yeah, I figure, you know, we'll take this one a little bit loose. But I did wonder. I was like, oh, well, normally we go over preliminary thoughts. I go, oh, let me ask Colin what his preliminary thoughts were. Mine, for the most part, were you just got a hold of me and were like, hey, man, let's do a podcast. And I was like, you were like, we're in quarantine. I was like, all right, fine. And, like, I just thought, okay, it'll give me something to do, a little bit of focus during the week.
Yeah. I mean, I was trying to come up with different creative avenues when we started this thing, just to keep my mind busy and to keep myself thinking about wrestling and, you know, keep being creative because I didn't know what was going on or how long this was going to last or what was going to happen during it. So, yeah, it was a way to stay, keep our minds fresh, I thought, and just something to put out to people to get kind of where we're coming from and how our brains tick.
But ain't that crazy? It was what, March, and you were like, hey, I got an idea. And you were like, well, just do it for, you know, however long quarantine is, you know, maybe a couple weeks, couple months, who knows? Now look at us.
Yeah, I mean, it's turned into just a fun little exercise. It's actually like, it's become easier and easier to watch the matches, and I know more what to look for, and I've got like better reference on certain things. So it's yeah, it's evolved and it's become less of a chore and more of just and I have fun like messing around with editing it and making sure it sounds right and getting everything together, and it's been a fun ride thus far.
Yeah, I've dug it. It's weird because in my head it was like, okay, I'll just watch a bunch of matches of a team, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, it's odd. I found it was more studying than I thought, but it was more so like self-inflicted. You know what I mean? Like, I thought,
yeah, for sure.
But then I found myself getting like kind of serious, like, all right, let's get down to business. All right, did I watch enough matches? All right, it's I gotta get like, oh, what is it? Oh, it's early, so I should probably get in like at least 3 or 4, maybe even 5, blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? It got more serious than I thought it would be, and it was just more me being neurotic, I guess.
So I'm a tape study guy. Tape study, I've always been big on, and I have a bunch of notebooks around the house that have like notes. And it's something that I used to teach at the wrestling school. It was like part of the curriculum. So this is just something that I normally do. It's just more focused on one tag team a week. And I've been loving it.
I don't know. As you say that, I'm like, yeah, I kind of do that. I was like, no, usually it's just me. I go, ooh, am I selfish? Like, yeah, I'm all about tape study and notes. And I was like, yeah, they're always just kind of about me and doing moves. And it's not like, oh, I happen to be studying. Like, if I'm studying, like, I'll go on deep dives on teams and stuff. But I never, like, have notes on them per se. But I have millions of notes on things I would want to do all over the place.
Oh, no. I have literal full notebooks of just notes I took about matches I've watched.
Oh, that's crazy. So we're similar in that we've got notes all over the place, but yours are a little more broad. Mine are very just selfish, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, but like, I've always thought that, you know, you can learn from anything in wrestling. Like, even a bad match, there's something you can take from it usually. So I just try and write. And I just write a bunch. You know, I always tell people just start writing. You know, how do you study wrestling if you don't know what you're looking for? The first thing I tell people is just start writing. You know, like, even if you think that something that you're writing is silly, write it.
Oh, yeah. I definitely had notebooks. I remember when I was early getting training and into the business, I had I have a ton of shoot interviews. I would take notes because they'd always give you like cool nuggets, like, I remember one I took was, I think it was a Jake Roberts one where he was like, there's three people in that ring. You use that ref. He's part of the deal. Like, you know what I mean? You can't just ignore him. And I was like, oh, yeah. And, you know, it took a few years for me, you know, for the light to turn on. But I remember having that in like in a notebook and something, being like, okay, I learned that from watching stuff.
Yeah. I mean, we both, I could barely sit through a shoot interview if I tried. So we both have our own ways about us.
But yeah, so it was cool. I definitely have a notebook now. I remember, oddly, I think I told you this, when we first started this, my notes were just on the back of envelopes that were of like junk mail. And then like, I remember at one point I was like, crap, I really need to get like a notebook. And like, I've almost used up the whole notebook almost.
Yeah, me too. I've only got a couple pages left. This is a brand new notebook at the beginning of this. I had just got this notebook because I had just filled my previous wrestling notebook. So the first two pages, I think, are just like random matches that I had watched before I decided we were going to do this podcast.
Yeah. See, I went out and bought one about, I think it was probably a month or so in. So yeah, probably like 3 or 4 weeks after, I was like, I'm running out of random envelopes. I go, I think I need to get a notebook.
So, while there is no specific format, I did, before we get into our teams, I did pull our top 5 most listened to episodes.
Oh, snap. See, I have no idea. I don't get to look into the numbers.
So, and a thing that I found, there's a couple things I find interesting about our most listened to episodes. First one is, we did not pick any of the 5 teams.
What do you mean?
I chose 5 teams, you chose 5 teams, and our most listened to episodes are none of the 10 we chose.
Oh, wow.
You'll see a pattern once I start listing them to you. Okay, so you want me to go bottom up?
Yeah.
I think I'm going to go top down. I'm going to go top down because the most listened to is kind of obvious.
Okay, go ahead.
So our most listened to episode is the Dudleys episode because it was the first episode.
Gotcha. Okay, that kind of makes sense, I guess.
So it's had the most time out there in the world for people to see.
Yep, yep. I agree.
Do you have a guess at who the second most listened to episode might be?
The Young Bucks, maybe? I don't know, just for recency bias, maybe?
You are correct.
Wow. Wow, look at me.
The Young Bucks. After the Young Bucks, it's Eminem.
Wow.
After Eminem, it's the Rockers.
Okay.
After the Rockers, it's the Rock and Roll.
Okay, so they like babyface teams?
If it went to six, it would be the Hardy Boys.
Okay, so yeah. Well, here's the thing. Funny enough, those were usually the most popular teams of their day. That's kind of why we were covering them. They were the young, cool babyface team. And they it shows it in the demographics. People thought so as well.
And it's still early, but if I had to put a pin on in our least listened to episode, it hasn't been around that long, so we can't knock it too hard, but it's the Mega Powers.
Really? That's odd.
It's like unusually low, like even for like a newer podcast. I think the Kawada Tawe episode, which is 1 week old, already has more than the Mega Powers.
That's hilarious, because I don't know, maybe people just don't see him like a tag team.
They were like, Hogan? Bleh.
Yeah, I guess. Wow, that was pretty cool. That was cool. That was eye-opening.
So that is it. Would you like to start with one of your teams?
Sure. Let me see. Where's my... Okay, that's my side of the list. The first team... Okay, this one I'll go with, because... It was the unholy alliance of Tajiri and Mikey Whipwreck, because my one note was that they were a revelation, but like not in like not to sound like super hyperbolic or anything. I'm just saying, like, I didn't know they wrestled so few matches. I didn't know they had so many cool moves. I didn't know how little of the surface they had scratched. I mean, it was so many things that I wasn't aware of.
Yeah, I agree, and also, a lot of the teams that I chose, I kind of chose for a similar reason.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Like, in no way was I picking, like, my five favorite top blah, blah, blah. I was like, oh, what were five that I really just enjoyed or stood out to me? Like, I know there's one team that I'm not sure why they stood out to me, but they stood out to me.
So Mikey and Tajiri, I'll give you just real quick. Their only championship and accomplishment was that they were one-time ECW tag champs.
Yeah. I love what was the stat? I think they only had, 18 matches or something like that? And I was like, okay, if that's our litmus test, it's wide open, because, like, we both agree they were a great tag team, but we just didn't realize it was such a short run.
Yeah, they had, I think it was under 30, and on TV it was under 20 or something crazy like that.
Yeah, that's why that's what stood out to me. I was like, wow, you know what I mean? We were both fans of the time, and like, yes, it seemed like, okay, their run got cut short by the end of ECW, but it was like, neither of us thought it was that short, but it was like, wow, what an influence they had for being such a short run, you know what I mean? Compared to like the other teams, some of the other teams on the list have like a bajillion matches. And it's like, oh, okay, yeah. No wonder they're influential.
Yeah, for sure. But that kind of goes for that entire tag team division that ECW had at that time, because we talked about the FBI with Guido and Tracy, but the FBI with Guido and Mamaluke were incredible, and they are in that same time frame. They probably only have the same amount of matches or very similar.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just, once again, everybody just got cut short by the end of ECW.
Yeah, it's a shame, though, because that tag team division back then was nuts.
Exactly, and that's why I think, like, it sticks out still, because it's like, oh, man, what could have been?
I agree.
All right, hit me with one of yours.
All right, I'm going to start with the Hollywood Blondes.
Okay.
Because, kind of like the other thing, I was never really a big Stunning Steve fan. With hair, no knee pads, Steve Austin never really did it for me. And admittedly, I'm not a Brian Pillman guy either.
Oh, see, I was definitely a Brian Pillman guy. I was a flying Brian guy. And then I just happened to be watching, like, I don't know, that the time of Stunning Steve and all his TV title matches and whatnot. So that's why he always stood out to me. So when you put them together, I was like, oh, okay, this is cool.
I thought Steve Austin, Stunning Steve back then, he had, like, he was awkward. It was awkward to watch him, I always felt. And Flying Brian, I always thought they pitched him as a cruiserweight, but he was, like, more of just a heavyweight. He did power slams. I was never big on either of them back then. And, you know, I've watched Hollywood Blondes things, but when we really dug in and studied, I just noticed what an incredible textbook heel tag team they were.
Yeah, exactly. See, now that's why it probably, for you, it stood out. Whereas for me, like I had said, I had come up on liking both of them, or at least I loved Flying Brian and Stunning Steve. I was just used to, you know what I mean? And I respected him. So I could see why it stood out to you. With me, it kind of made sense, but it was like, it was an odd pairing that you wouldn't quite assume, maybe, because I think even I think in my own watching, I'm in like the era of WCW where they've kind of crossed over and they're kind of teaming, but still aren't the Hollywood Blondes yet. And it's just like, wow, when you look at it on the surface, you're kind of like, okay, they're just throwing two guys together. But like you said, once you dig in and do a deep dive, you're like, wow, what a textbook team they were, especially because, you know what I mean, like we even covered it, like, you could tell Flying Brian's almost doing, not like a parody, but his version of almost being like heel Ric Flair. And then this is total nonstop movement Steve Austin era.
Which I think I didn't appreciate back then, but watching it now, I love.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's hilarious, cause especially because, you know, once again, he became Stone Cold and was not quite as mobile, obviously, neck injuries, et cetera, but back then, he was just a ball of energy. And once again, I remember loving about the episode, bitching about how much of a beating he would take from like random jobbers all the time. And I was like, why are you letting them hit so many moves on you?
He just, because he can't stop moving. He needs to keep moving. So the Hollywood Blondes, for statistics, they were one-time WCW tag champs, one-time NWA tag champs, and the 1993 Observer Tag Team of the Year.
Yeah, and deservedly so. That's the thing. I was glad that they definitely got their due.
Yeah, and another thing that I noted from back then and that always stuck out to me was that 92-93 WCW was like current indie wrestling with their two random guys coming together and being a team all over the roster.
All over.
So they were the one constant. And yeah, it was one of those episodes where I was just like going in. I thought it was going to be all right. I thought I would enjoy it. I knew they were a good tag team, but was way blown away by just how textbook good they were at pretty much every facet of it.
I know that was the thing when you like even in my notes when I was like my notes for when like what I thought of them was like it was work rate. But not, but yes, but wasn't, you know what I mean? Like, they did so much without technically even doing a lot, but it was, you know what I mean? Once again, nonstop movement, taking a lot of moves, and then eventually they would do stuff, but you know what I mean? Like, you want to immediately say work rate, but then you kind of have to dig deep to be like, well, it's a specific kind of work rate they're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess you could just look at it and just be like, oh, yeah, they're just tag team wrestling, but. Do you understand how hard that is? Do you understand that it's not that – I don't know. Do people understand that it's not that simple?
Especially with, like you said, so many made-up wacky teams.
Yeah, I don't have a single – on my list, there's not one single team that has a tag team name.
Oh, wow. That's a weird coincidence. Mine does, but they're more, you know – like the Unholy Alliance wasn't the most super prevalent. Like, oh, you're like, oh, yeah, yeah, that was their tag name, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, Arn and Flair are the closest I got for them.
Yep, yep, yep. Well, which will bring me to the end here. I'll go to my team, which also had a weird team name of sorts. And kind of similar reason for you, I was a little skeptical, was the Filthy Animals of Kidman and Ray. Because I remember the reason they stood out to me was weird. I personally was like, okay, I want to look up some WCW teams. I looked them up on that list and I was like, really? They're like top 15 or they may even have been top 10. And I was skeptical and they proved me wrong. You know what I mean? For the chaos that they were in WCW, like, they obtained an incredible amount of credibility for cruiserweights. So when they formed their Voltron of a tag team, they had good matches and they were able to do it with big guys, little guys. It was great.
So what's funny is I told you that I have a couple. I took notes on a couple of matches in this notebook before we had started this, and one of them is a Filthy Animals match randomly.
See, I remember it was a while back. I had went on a Jindrak O'Hare run, which we had covered, but they didn't make my top five. But I remember a long time ago, it was a couple of years ago, I had been looking, and I just remember going, wow, like Ray and Hoovy, Ray and Kidman, all the Filthy Animals were so good to those guys by making them look so great in their matches. So yeah, it was a team that I had already dug into a little bit myself beforehand, which is why I was like, okay, I'd seen their stuff. They didn't strike me as like, oh, these are stalwarts of the tag division. They're one of the all-time greats. But when I dug into it with their weird amount of longevity as a team, they definitely rose to the occasion.
As far as accomplishments goes, they were one-time WCW tag champs and one-time, and I believe the final WCW cruiserweight tag champs.
I don't think they were final. I think they lost them like either the week before or the night, or maybe they won them the night before. Maybe that's what it was. But yeah, they had something with like Kid Romeo and Elix Skipper or something.
I think they won them on the final night.
Ah, that's what it was. Okay. I knew there was some sort of shenanigans. So yeah, they were the final WCW Cruiserweight Tag Champs.
So this was a topic that came up during the Filthy Animals episode. Have you since gone and watched any Disorderly Conduct matches?
I may have. I definitely know I looked into them. Maybe not necessarily did matches, but I researched.
So I researched, but I also specifically watched matches outside of us studying matches, just because that Disorderly Conduct match is so good that I had to watch more and see if it's an anomaly. And I can tell you with almost 100% certainty that that Ray and Kidman match is an anomaly.
Oh, you break my heart. I was so anticipating. Oh, that's a shame.
My God, though, that match, Ray and Kidman against Disorderly Conduct, I'm pretty sure we probably spent 10 minutes on that match alone in that episode. And if you haven't done so since listening to that episode, do yourself a favor and go watch Ray and Kidman against Disorderly Conduct.
Oh, that's funny. Well, that was the other thing I really liked about that episode, too, is we got to find they wrestled kind of a weird, eclectic group. So you got to see them versus a random team like Disorderly Conduct. Or I liked them when they had that random match versus the Armstrong Brothers. You know what I mean? That's another fun thing that you get out of these. Like, all right, yeah, I am definitely keeping my eye on the team I'm covering. But it's always really fun to almost catch myself putting too many notes about the other team. But that's what's fun about this. We get such a weird array of teams.
Especially when the other team is Disorderly Conduct.
Especially when it's WCW in that era, you get such random-ass tag teams.
I can't remember which team it was, but we were like both stuck on the other team for some reason. Just like because we knew the team that we were studying was good, and we're like stuck on who they were fighting every time.
Yeah, that's the fun part about it. It's like, you know, that happened like last episode where we were talking about Kawada and Tawe, where I was like, I found myself taking more, but I was like, that just shows how good a team they are too sometimes, you know what I mean? When, you know, they're able to spotlight the other team, which is a great thing, which is another thing we found about a lot of these teams, which why I got to Kidman and Ray, they are really good against big guys like Jindrak and O'Hare or big guys like Disorderly Conduct. You know what I mean? There were hidden gems all in there.
Yeah, and speaking of Kawada and Tawe, my next team was Kenta and Marufuji.
Yes, okay, now I have to let you know this. You sent me your five. We definitely had crossover, so luckily I had options that I picked. This is definitely on my top five as well.
It's so funny because this episode felt so just for me and you.
Yeah, I guess maybe. I don't know, because I feel like... It depends what our listenership is. You know what I mean? If they're anything like us, they're huge Kenta and Marufuji fans. You know what I mean?
Yes. Kenta and Marufuji hit that perfect sweet spot for guys like me and you who aren't the biggest guys but loved Japanese wrestling and were coming up in the early 2000s.
Yeah, man. It was great. And I was pumped that you picked it because in my head I was like, obviously, like I like them. I have their best of VHS and stuff. And I was like, all right, I know Colin into them too. I know Colin's seen all the matches. I wonder what Colin thinks. So now they're on your top five. I think that's awesome.
Oh, I think if I was to have a personal like top 10 like wrestlers based upon like if I was making a list based upon like ability.
Uh-huh.
Marufuji is on that list. Top 10 all time.
Yeah, he's amazing.
Unbelievable. And I don't think he's a guy who like I should have been bigger. If that's not I mean, and he was big, but he should have been bigger.
Yeah, no, because he stayed in Noah and stuff. But what I like is his recent like when he's made his jaunts into New Japan, they treat him like a big deal. Like he's had big matches versus Okada and stuff. So I'm like, all right, at least he's still, you know, revered and held in high esteem. Kenta's had a little bit of a weird run when he went to America, but now he's back in Japan kicking ass. So I mean, if we ever could be so lucky, if the world could get them to combine forces again, that would be amazing. But for now, we still have the golden years of Noah in 02, 03, 04, and God knows how long it went. But all those matches.
So as far as accomplishments, they were only one-time GHC Junior Tag Champs, which seems nuts. But they both have held the GHC Heavyweight, the Junior Heavyweight, the Tag, and the Junior Tag. Individually, not necessarily together.
Yeah, that's one of those things where, you know, they were supernovas when they came up and they were youngsters. So, you know, only one reign, you think, yeah, maybe that's a little not much. But from that was the platform that they skyrocketed off to go get all those other title reigns.
So who you got next?
All right. So mine, and I am 90% sure this came from our Teams with No Names month. Was I had Edge and Christian. And this is the team that sticks out to me, and I'm not quite sure why, because I feel like I feel like maybe my review may have been maybe not even the most positive, or I don't know. I feel like it was shaded negative for me, but I found it super positive. Like, they almost made me reexamine how I think of watching the matches, because remember I made the comparison that they're like the most digestible team, where it's not necessarily doing the most flat moves, but always accomplished the goal 100%. So like, they definitely stood out for me in that weird reason, because like, I don't know if it was they subverted expectations or exceeded them, but they definitely messed with my expectations. So yeah, that they definitely made it on my list, because even as I'm coming up with it, they just kept ringing in my head. I was like, nah, I thought I didn't like them that much. I thought I didn't like them as much as I thought, or like, I kept trying to be negative on them, but I was like, all right, if it keeps popping in my head, they got to be my top five then.
No, this is one of the teams that I think we both like, as we were talking about it, we almost not talked ourselves into it, but in discussion kind of came up with just or landed on the fact that they were just almost perfect. Like they were so there wasn't too much to them. It wasn't like I don't know, like you'd have to go back and listen to the episode. Listen to me. I'm even struggling to land on what we determined or what we discussed. But they were good as heels or baby faces. They would play whatever role, even if they were supposed to be heels, but the other team was heels, they would play a little more baby face. They were just so good at absolutely whatever they needed to be as a tag team.
Yeah. It was definitely one of the most debated ones, and not even a negative thing. It was just almost a something of coming to the conclusion of like, oh, wow, they were way better than we thought, or, you know what I mean? Or the thing was, another reason, they were always super high on all these top team lists. So it was like, and it made sense, but it was like, okay, it definitely needed an examination. And in doing so, you came to a lot of realization. So it was, it was one of the better episodes, I thought, especially for that. And in doing the research, it was amazing to, you know, I think that was one of the ones where I saw like a bajillion matches just because, like I said, they were so easy to watch. You flew right through them. You know, they weren't necessarily the longest matches, but even if they were in the 10, 15 minute range, they were super easy to breeze through. You know what I mean? They weren't a chore at all.
And one of my favorite quotes in the entire history of the podcast is when you told us all that you are pretty sure Christian receives mail at the timekeeper's table.
Oh, yeah, I totally forgot about that. Yeah, man, he does a lot of work there. He does a lot of work there.
One of my favorite quotes of the entirety, if my brain allows it, I'm going to find that clip specifically and put it in this episode.
Yeah, that was definitely fun. It's true, man. They were definitely masters of the cheating with the title belts, and Christian was the man at it. Oh, yeah, that was definitely fun. And what's also fun I like about them is they also popped up a lot in other teams we'd watch. That was the other thing. I was tempted to go through and see, like, technically, for me at least, what team I saw the most wouldn't necessarily be the team where I saw the most matches of theirs in studying. It was like that plus how many did they pop up in other people's. And they were a team that got around a little.
Yeah, for sure. That era of tag team wrestling, because, you know, they wrestled the Hardys a lot. They wrestled the Dudleys a lot. They wrestled the Outlaws. And these are all teams that we've also covered.
Exactly. You know what I mean? So, yeah, they were definitely around for a good era of tag team wrestling.
All right. My next – oh, hold on. Accomplishments. Let me give you a little bit. Oh, they got a
crap ton. I was going to say. Wait, let me see if I remember. Didn't they have, like, 6 tag title reigns or something? Yes, no, maybe.
I lost you. What was it?
Well, was it 6 reigns they had?
7.
Oh, I was so close. Okay.
And they were PWI Match of the Year 2 years in a row. They were the Observer Tag Team of the Year in 2000. In 2012, WWE named them the best team in WWE history.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying. I remember, yeah, they popped up super high on lists, and I think one of the other lists, they were like number 2 on another list or something.
Sports Illustrated, they're number 2.
Yeah, see, that's what I'm saying. So yeah, they definitely, you know, I mean, when you're that high, you're like, all right, well, you're gonna get a little scrutiny, but you know, they rose to the occasion once again.
Yeah, for sure. And now we will move to my next team, which is the Outsiders.
See, this is funny because this wasn't on my top 5, but it was like in my top 7. So when I had to dig deep, I was like, oh, wait, that one's already taken.
Yeah. And this one kind of goes back to what we were talking about. Like, I don't remember, like, I know Scott Hall and Kevin Nash, both super accomplished, very talented wrestlers, but like, I couldn't name a memorable Outsiders match, you know? So I just didn't think much of them. They're more known for, like, you know, quote, burying talent and just pushing themselves and yada, 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 right?
Yeah, yeah, and NWO shenanigans, not necessarily like, ooh, the Outsiders on their, you know, 5-star matches.
But then we watched it, and man, like, right off the get and all the way throughout, like, you don't see that when watching them. They just look cool, and they look confident, and they do go out of their way to make other people look good. They give everyone the opportunity to look good. But if someone doesn't take that opportunity, they are going to keep their cool and keep their confident and just smush you out.
Yeah. It's funny because, you know, you do associate them so much with non-wrestling things. But once again, we're studying the matches. So, like, as much as – you know, we may have these preconceived notions. It's like, all right, well, once the bell rings, they have to do stuff. So once again, like, I remember one of my favorite notes was like, it was just weird seeing the Steiners throw around giant ass Kevin Nash just because he's a giant. But you know what I mean? Like, the bell rings. Guess what? As much as he's known for his out of the ring shenanigans, he's gonna have to take bumps. He's gonna have to take suplexes, and it's so odd to see because you don't necessarily associate him with it. But that was part of the joy and deep diving the team, seeing them actually have to wrestle and work and stuff. And they weren't bad at it.
No, God, no. They let Wrath and Mortis give them everything they possibly could take.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like, we associate them as, you know, these lazy guys, but it's like, all right, maybe they are, and maybe, you know, the matches we watched were few and far between, and every other week was promos and stuff. Who knows? Maybe it was. But what we went And what we did was just watch the matches. So we were able to see all the stuff they did. And they're fun double teams of usually hit a move with a guy in the corner, take the ref, and the other guy comes running down the line, hit him with a clothesline. Like, that was a staple of theirs.
Yeah, I don't know. It was one of those ones that, you know, and once again, they are a highly regarded tag team. If I can go through their accomplishments, they were six-time WCW tag champs. They were the 1997 PWI team of the year. They were number 40 on that PWI top 100 teams list. You know, like these are real accomplishments.
Yeah, like, and you look at the bare bone, or you look at the parts, we'll say. You've got Kevin Nash, who's a world champion, and then you got Scott Hall, who's basically one of the, who's on the list of best wrestlers not to be a world champion. So once again, when you put them together, and they had a pretty decent run together, you know what I mean? You're going to get good stuff. It's not crazy to be like, oh no, they were good. Well, obviously they're good. But you just got to get past the whole NWO fog around them.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, let me go into mine. See, okay, this my next pick I'll go with was, I think, my most conventional, and it just delivered. Like, I feel like most of our lists are a little bit where guys kind of the team supplanted or was a curveball in some way. I'm going with the Hart Foundation because they were great, and then I watched them, and guess what? They were great. And my biggest note was or my favorite note was the ambiance once again. Like, I can't get the picture of them glistening in their black and their pink versus, you know, whoever, the Rougeaus in their blue and their yellow, or versus Honky Tonk Man and his whole getup. And then, you know, the crowds were huge, and it just had that great sheen about it of the 80s, you know what I mean? So that one in no way was it like, oh, it was a curveball or a twist. It was like, no. It was one of the best wrestlers of all time and one of the greatest characters combined to make this weird tag team that totally worked, that made some weird formula that teams totally followed in the footsteps of. But you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't, there were no curveballs.
Yeah, I love that you picked the Hart Foundation and also picked Edge and Christian, because I remember in this episode, because Hart Foundation came a couple weeks after we had watched Edge and Christian, and we realized that Edge and Christian kind of follow the Hart Foundation mold.
Oh, yes, that's right. I forgot about that as well. Yeah, no, and you know, they're all Canadian, ha, ha, ha. Or, well, I mean, Neidhart's not, but he might as well be. You know what I mean?
Okay, so we did the Rock and Roll Rockers, Hardys, Young Bucks. So thinking about the Hart Foundation to Edge and Christian, what comes before Hart Foundation and what comes after Edge and Christian? If we were to... do that same experiment, but with this formula.
I don't know, because I would try and think beforehand, but it wasn't before. And I'd say almost Arn and Tully, because you know what I mean? But they weren't. They were just the mirrors. They were just the other version in the other company. If I was going to pick an older team, I'd say maybe we'd have to go Ray Stevens and Pat Patterson, maybe, and then for like a new one, that one's tough. I'd have to look into that, but that is a hell of a brain teaser on what like the modern version of Edge and Christian would be. I don't know.
I don't know where we would go for like newer. We haven't done the New Day yet, but maybe the New Day runs the same similar ilk.
Maybe, but like I kind of see those teams like Hart Foundation and Edge and Christian as bad guys, and I don't necessarily see the New Day as bad guys, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know. It's definitely worth investigating, and I'm sure eventually we're going to hit that team. We're just going to start watching someone, and we're like, oh my god, they're Edge and Christian, they're the Hart Foundation, they're just that.
Yeah, and I look forward to figuring it out, and I'll maybe after this, but yeah, right off the bat, I don't know. But yeah, if we go back in time, I don't know, maybe, but then, I don't know, maybe we got to go with the Canadian motif, so who knows, maybe it's an earlier version of Hart Brothers, who knows.
I hope it's a Smith Hart team.
Yeah, we'll go Smith and Dallas, right? Was there one Dallas Hart or something?
Hart Foundation, they were two-time WWF Tag Team Champs. They were number 37 on the PWI list, number 3 on the Sports Illustrated list, and number 2 on WWE's list of greatest tag teams of all time.
That's what I'm saying. And once again, my favorite thing was just the look of the entire era. Everybody had their own color scheme and everything was bright. And it was the 80s and everything was rocking. It was great. I loved it.
Yeah. I'm going to hop back a little further than that. And I'm going to go Midnight Express. I couldn't get away from a top 5 without the Midnight Express.
Of course. How could you not? They also were on my top 5, but you had them on yours. So I was like, all right, I'll pick someone else. But yeah, obviously they're top 5. How could they not be?
Yeah. Much like you were just saying with the Hart Foundation, this is when I walked in knowing you knew what you were getting. They were great. And basically they built what modern tag team wrestling is.
Exactly. You know, I mean, you go back and you look at the stuff Bobby was doing and you're just like, okay, for the time, it's incredible. Okay, in 2020, looking at, a top rope leg drop, no matter what looks impressive, but I could see how you're like, it's not a 630, blah, blah, blah. But for that era, it goddamn was.
And not just that. I mean, they took we talked about the Hollywood Blondes just a little bit ago, who were like, they had that perfect heel tag team thing going. Like, they got it from the Midnights.
Okay, and here's another big thing that we also usually, or at least I always bring up in most of these, is the whole package. And much like the previous team with the Hart Foundation, this was once again a package deal. You know what I mean? You had them, you had the crazy manager and Jim Cornette, you know what I mean? You had Stan Lane being the pretty boy, but you know what I mean? He was still badass enough. And then you just had Bobby Eaton, who was one of the best wrestlers at that time, going, period.
Yeah, and Stan Lane's karate.
Goddamn right!
I was just watching one of our matches from pandemic times, and you start by doing Stan Lane stretches and telling the ref, I'm doing Stan Lane stretches.
Oh, you're goddamn right. That's right. The world needs to know.
It was probably within weeks of us doing this recording of Midnight Express.
Oh, exactly. And, okay, here, I wanted to bring this up just as a general thing. It's a shame we were doing this during pandemic times, because imagine all the wackiness we would have done in our matches had, the week we did Edge and Christian, or the week we did the Hart Foundation, or the week we did Midnight Express. You know what I mean? It seeped into that, you know what I mean? So imagine how all the other ones could have.
Anybody who follows the podcast would be watching us being like, oh yeah, they definitely watched Kawada and Tawe this week as we throw choke slam backdrop drivers.
Yep. Or we just do a whole lot of nothing and like they watch The Outsiders.
So Midnight Express, I remember I thought they would have more accomplishments, but 3-time NWA US tag, 1-time NWA World tag, PWI Team of the Year 87, Observer Team of the Year 87 and 88.
And now, tell me if you agree. Whereas in contrast to the Hart Foundation and us growing up in the Northeast, the Hart Foundation, we knew they were great because we had seen it all basically at the time. And so, you know what I mean? It was easy for them to live up to the expectation because we kind of already knew. Whereas, okay, I'll speak for myself. Yes, I've seen a ton of Midnight Express matches, but to do a deep dive felt a little different because I didn't grow up with them. I didn't live through it at that time. Yes, I've seen a lot of it since then, but you know what I mean? Like, there was no me at, 8 or 9 watching the Midnight Express, but there was me at, 8, 9, or 10 watching the Hart Foundation. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true. And also, because WCW/NWA does not exist anymore, and WWE kind of controls the narrative on what we believe about wrestling history, I think all that kind of plays into it a little bit.
Yeah, but you know what I mean? I felt like like I said, Hart Foundation, I knew they delivered. And you were like, Midnight Express, I knew they delivered. But I was like, yeah, but it was more on a retrospective thing where it was like, okay, I knew as a kid. But what made this Midnight Express episode great was that I was able to do the deep dive and watch nitty gritty stuff for like random TV matches that I hadn't seen. Like, yes, I've seen them in, you know, their bigger matches versus, you know, the Young Pistols before, but I hadn't seen their squash match versus Lord Zoltan, or, you know what I mean? Or the Golden Terror, or whoever, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I definitely know what you mean.
That was definitely fun. And one of the part of the enjoyment was like, oh, I haven't seen any of this weird deep cut stuff.
That's usually what I do anytime I study. If there's a match that I know I've seen a bunch, I usually avoid it because, you know, and maybe I'll see some things that I missed before, but I don't know. I want to see something that I don't necessarily remember.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? We did cover all the teams in the TLC WrestleMania. Like, we did the Hardys, we did the Dudleys, we did the Edge of Christian. But I don't think any of us necessarily went back and watched all the ladder matches. You know what I mean? We were like, all right, we've seen those.
Nope, watched it when we did the Dudleys and said, okay, I saw it.
Exactly. But, you know, I mean, one of the fun parts of this exercise is getting to do the deep dive into the deep cuts and see random TV matches where they squash somebody for no reason in 3 minutes.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, and then let's go.
Last team.
Last one was, oddly, and it was just because, I don't know, they just stuck with me, Jado and Gato. Team No Respect, if you want to. Yeah. It was fun for me because obviously I love them as a tag team. And it's just been fun to see how much they've grown in influence, especially now that they're, you know, bookers and behind the scene pencil men and whatnot. But just when you look at the style, like, how much did we as a tag team watch them be like, ooh, let's jot that down. You know what I mean? It was much more than I expected. I thought, oh, okay, I knew them. I didn't think they'd be as influential as they were. Not that they weren't. They just ended up exceeding my expectation. I'll put it that way.
Well, right. And they were like, so, you know, there's always been junior tags, but I think they were the junior tag for a very, very long time.
Yeah, that was the other thing. They have a long longevity, so that definitely helped. And in multiple companies, you know what I mean? There was the FMW, there was Michinoku Pro, they did a bunch of indies, then they eventually made their way to New Japan, and then, you know, they set up shop.
The first match I have is from 95, the last match I watched was from 2017.
That's what I'm saying, you know what I mean? And once again, being junior heavyweights, in an era where they flourished in Japan, these two were an ever-present stalwart team. Like, yeah, they teamed with other people every now and then, but for the most part, they were a constant. There was always Jado and Gato, you know what I mean?
What did I text you just the other day?
That Chris Jericho got someone out of the ring doing the Gato-Jado move?
Yes! He front suplexed them and then charged him with the shoulder block. I was like, that's a Gato and Jado spot!
Yeah! And it makes sense because I told you, I go, oh, yeah, he was part of the group. He was Liondo. It was Gato, Jado, Liondo.
He did it. And I marked out. I was like, hell yeah. Yeah, that's what you texted me back. He was in the group. He's allowed.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's allowed to do it. Now, part of me just wonders, like, I would love to just ask him and be like, oh, do you also know that as a Jado Gato spot? He'd be like, oh, yes. I would assume he would say yes. But it would just be funny to see, like, hey, is that a Jado Gato that you know? He'd be like, how'd you know? Because, you know, I just, you know, I have this podcast, blah, blah, blah. No big deal. No big deal. But, yeah, that was one of the fun little things that you get to see. And you get to see on TV now. That's just hilarious. Like, who would have, like, I don't think anybody else noticed that probably other than us.
Oh, I almost guarantee it. It's my favorite thing.
The only other people who noticed it were Jado and Gato.
So, man, they have more stats than I remember.
Oh, yeah, because once again, they've been around forever.
Yeah, they were 4-time IWGP Junior Tag Champs, 1-time GHC Junior Tag Champs, 1-time Big Japan Tag Champs, 1-time WEW Tag Champs, and 1-time Dragon Gate IJ Heavyweight Tag Champs, in addition to winning the 2010 Super J Tag League.
Yeah, they were the team forever and ever. It's weird. Like, okay, think about it. Only in super, super recent, like the last 3 or 4 years, have they actually, like, slowed down. You know what I mean? Like, that's it. Other than that, they've just been running and gunning. And they were indie guys, so they would do shows when they would had a bajillion matches when they were probably doing all those FMW things. And plus, they were the workhorses on those shows. Yeah. It was not abnormal for them to work twice on those shows.
Also, they were another tag team that when looking at their, like, cage match and whatever, it's like, you know, 12 pages worth of matches.
Oh, yeah. Like we said, it's been around forever. They're amazing. They've wrestled everyone. And now they've, you know what I mean? And they've left influence everywhere they've gone. So, you know what I mean? And but once again, like I said, Michinoku Pro. All those tales you named, you just named them. I don't need to name them again, but that just said, the fact that they've been everywhere is means something. And we got to examine it. It was great. And it was fun just because I like watching all the wacky old Japanese stuff.
Yeah. All right. So we're at the end here. We're down to the very last team.
All right. Hit me with it.
And this team is, for me, was like the definition of knew what I was getting and completely wrong with the Hardy Boys.
Yeah. I knew you were going to pick this one because I knew you thought you were anti and left very, very pro.
So growing up, I always thought that the Hardy Boys were more just popular because of their Hot Topic pants and like Jeff would do a flip. And that's why I thought they were popular, 100%.
Yeah, I get it. You just thought they were just a fad of the times.
I think I probably watched more Hardy Boys matches than I watched any matches in the entire thing because I just kept going.
Yeah, and
even more of this.
The one thing that I really liked about them was, whereas other teams we were like, oh, we only got the potential or only scratched the surface, this is one of those teams that was amazing and got to work everyone. You know what I mean?
Yes. Once again, my list started with Furnace and LaFon and ended with the Young Bucks.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. So, like, I feel like that's totally in their advantage is, A, the longevity and the fact that, like, they've got to go everywhere, like TNA, like Ring of Honor. Like, you know what I mean? They've been everywhere. And when they went there, they had to wrestle all the coolest guys. You know what I mean? Like, their cage match listing is amazing. Like, there's no one you can talk to them and be like, oh, you know what I mean? Like, it's just it must be insane to talk to them and then be like, oh, yeah, I have a story about that guy. I have a story about wrestling that guy. I have a story about wrestling that guy. You know what I mean? Like, they must have that for everyone.
Yeah, literally everyone. And their match against the Young Bucks in whatever 2018 is just as good as anything you would have seen of them in their entire careers. Still working hard, you know, 30 years.
Oh, my God. Like, the ladder matches they had with the Young Bucks and the table bumps and the ladder bumps. And I was like, just as good as the shit they were doing at WrestleMania, just obviously not on as big a scale. And they were doing it years later, all banged up. Like, how Jeff is still in one piece is beyond me.
Yeah, still doing it. Like, still working. You know, and when Matt's on AEW, still doing it at a respectable high level, you know. You expect guys to break down. Especially guys who went as hard as they went.
And those guys are still doing the crazy tables and ladder bumps. Like, you know what I mean? Like, Matt was just shooting with Sammy and they were going through, remember he had that scary ass bump where he went through a table off the high scaffold. And then, what was it, a couple weeks ago, Jeff did the swanthon through Elias and bonked his head on the back of the stairs. Like, these guys are still at it. Once again, wrestling Elias, a new generation guy, wrestling Sammy Guevara, a new generation guy. Like, they've touched so many generations.
Sammy Guevara was definitely not alive when the Hardy Boys wrestled.
Exactly. But the fact that they're still kicking and they get to wrestle those guys and have weird fat, that's a Matt fact. Write that down. Matt fact. We need to let them know.
And I mean, we could talk about their crazy whatever, but like, that's what I always thought of them as. But then in watching this, they're so creative in the things they were doing wrestling wise. And when they would get in with other guys who were a bit younger and faster, you know, you would see them try things and like create things and invent things and do wacky, fun stuff that was like super like before its time or like ahead of its time or just, you know, great for the time.
Yeah. And one other thing, I think they were one of the teams where, of course, you know, they would get froggy with Edge and Christian, but they were one of the teams where I was like, ooh, they made me realize how good Too Cool was with their matches. You know what I mean? They had great matches with them. They had great matches with so many teams. Like, know what I mean? Like, they've wrestled Triple H and Stone Cold, you know what I mean? Like, in a main event on a Raw, you know what I mean? And they've also wrestled, like, the Briscoes on a Ring of Honor show. Like, it's just crazy.
Yeah, let's... They are a team that is highly regarded as one of the greatest teams of all time, but after doing this exercise, I don't think they're rated high enough.
Yeah, that's my favorite thing, is you're like, oh, yeah, yeah, I was negative. I was like, not only are you not negative anymore, you're pro, and you're like, no, they deserve more credit, and they've already got a ton of credit.
They are 6-time WWE Tag Champs, 1-time Raw Tag, 1-time SmackDown Tag, 1-time WCW Tag, 2-time TNA Tag, 1-time Ring of Honor Tag.
Yeah, bro. They've done it all and are still doing.
2000 PWI Team of the Year, runner-up in 99. They also, PWI Match of the Year, 2000-2001. In 2017, they were the PWI Comeback Wrestler of the Year. Like, man. And then on that Sports Illustrated list, they're number 7. Number 7!
And, okay, once again, like I said earlier, another team that was a big package deal. Team Extreme was the coolest thing in the 2000, in the year 2000. You know what I mean? Them plus Smoking Hot Lita with her thong up way too high for no reason, and everybody loved it. Like, that whole package was beyond, beyond, beyond. Like, I can only imagine what their residual checks looked like.
Although I did write at one point, was Lita a bad thing for the Hardys?
Maybe in the end, but I'm just saying, in the year 2000, Team Extreme was the coolest thing going.
Yeah, so that was it, man. That's the 10 we chose of the 34 teams we've covered on DreamWorks. Those are our 10 favorite that we enjoyed researching and recording the most.
Exactly. It was a fun year of digging into all these fun teams, and those were our favorite 5 each of our funnest ones.
Yeah, that's what it came down to for me, and I'm gonna try and dig back and grab some clips out of these episodes to pop into this this episode. And yeah, if you didn't check out any of those episodes, hop back through the archives. All of them are still available on, you know, pretty much wherever you get your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. I don't know how else people listen to podcasts nowadays, but I'm sure there's plenty of ways.
And yeah, give them a listen, because apparently, as we learned in the beginning, they are the most popular ones. So see why we liked them at least.
Yeah, for sure. All right, now another special episode, a year in review next week.
Yes. I think that would be fun, because I caught myself doing a little bit of year in review, and I go, oh wait, you know what I mean? Normally we cover a team, we get around 10 or so matches. I was like, oh, we only had around 10 or so tag matches. Like, oh, we can just do a year in review. I think it'll be great. I'm bringing a shovel. I'm ready to bury everybody. Everybody, you hear me, Dom? You hear me, Dom?
Good Lord. All right. Well, apparently that's going to happen next week. So this is going to come out Christmas Eve. So I hope everyone has a Merry Christmas, a Happy Holidays, and enjoy yourselves until next week.
Adios.